Okay, good morning, everyone, and thank you for the introduction, Peter. Again, my name is Katie, and I'd also like to acknowledge my co-author, Jill Waltz, before I get started on this project. She couldn't make it to the meeting today, but she's been an invaluable source of support and effort on this project. And I'd also like to begin with just declaring that I have no financial relationships to disclose. So to introduce you to the project, I'm going to start with a discussion of sort of the overarching research question and what we are aiming to examine in this case study. And it begins with an observation that there are a growing number of health policy networks at the global level that are working to draw attention and resources to their issue of concern. And there's been a lot of speculation over why some of these networks have been more effective than others, but little scholarship to investigate some potential causes. And so we're taking a networked approach and looking at these global entities. And to do so, we're defining network as a system of relations between individuals and organizations working in concert to address a shared concern. And by effectiveness, we're really looking to see how they are able to garner resources, get attention for their issue, and contribute to the adoption and implementation of policies on the ground with the hopes of eventually improving health outcomes. And so for the research design, the TB case is actually one of six that were selected as matched pairs. And this is part of a larger research project called the Global Health Advocacy and Policy Project. TB and pneumonia were selected as matched pairs because they are both leading causes of death globally among communicable diseases of the respiratory system. But despite pneumonia killing more people per year, TB has received greater funding and policy attention. And so this comparison is what David Berlon is going to be discussing next, but I'm hoping to help introduce the TB case and give some background. And the TB case makes an interesting case for this because it's considered to be a model in best practices. And when you look at it now, it's an expansive network that includes about 1,600 organizations all over the world. It has an official global plan used to coordinate work efforts, has an institutionalized administrative structure in Geneva called the Partnership to Stop TB, and it has a clearly articulated intervention strategy that has been widely adopted around the world. The data for this project was gathered using semi-structured interviews with key informants, and so we targeted individuals who held leadership positions and who've also been involved in this network over the course of several decades, because we were looking for really detailed historical information about the emergence of the network and how it's evolved and changed over time and adapted to changing circumstances. And then we also pulled together hundreds of documents that include previous evaluations of the partnership, work on TB control efforts around the world, and then going to individual organizations that we identified as network members and looking at their advocacy and research. And together, we used a process tracing methodology to cross-check the validity of our information across these different sources. And for the whole project, we realized that you can't look at networks in isolation, that there are other factors that might influence both the work that they're capable of doing, but also the outcomes of interest. So for example, issue characteristics, how a disease is spread, who it affects, how many people it affects, these are factors that could influence disease attention and that can also influence network strategies. And in the environment can also provide opportunities or constraints for network activities or directly influence these outcomes as well. So we are looking at the interaction between these various components to explain our outcomes. And in my presentation, I'm really going to focus on looking at network structure. So it's how these organizations, how the network itself is organized and how the relationships between them work. The governance process, which is how they make decisions and come to decide what to do and develop consensus around strategies. And then some of the strategies that they've been employing and how successful they have been. And to give you a bit of background on issue characteristics that are relevant to the discussion of the network, it's important to point out that TB is a very common and potentially lethal infection. The WHO estimates that approximately a third of the world's population is currently infected, but only about 5 to 10% of people actually become infectious. And for TB to be spread, it has to be pulmonary TB, so it has to be infection in the lungs that is then spread by coughing, sneezing, talking, or spitting. It can lie dormant for years, so many people may not know that they're infected. It also requires long duration of treatment, which can make TB programs difficult to implement. And globally, you can see the concentration of TB incidences in Africa, parts of Eastern Europe, and Asia. And as of 2001, there are approximately 8.7 million new cases every year and 1.4 million deaths. And TB incidence over time has been decreasing, albeit slowly, but there is an increasing concern about multi-drug resistant TB. And there has been increasing reported numbers of cases, and it's uncertain at this point whether it's showing an increase in MDR TB globally or just that we're actually catching more of these cases. And as I mentioned, TB has been a part, it's been affecting the human population for quite a long period of time, so the attention to the disease has sort of ebbed and flowed. And if you look back at the late 1800s, there's a lot of attention to it because at that point, TB was one of the primary killers. It's estimated about 1 in 4 people in Europe, for example, died of tuberculosis. But then with the invention of antibiotics and the success of rolling out antibiotics, TB deaths plummeted, and this led to what the literature has described as this period of complacency where attention to TB, at the global level at least, dropped off. And it wasn't until the 1980s with high-profile epidemics of HIV-related TB and MDR-TB in cities such as New York that global attention really was brought again to tuberculosis. And since that time, you've seen an increase in research, funding, and policy attention. But those focusing events of HIV and MDR-TB didn't directly lead to the development of the network. It took some time, so it didn't emerge overnight. What's important to point out in this timeline is that the World Health Organization, there were several TB experts at this organization that really took a leadership role in both establishing a primary intervention strategy and in getting the network off the ground. And the WHO TB department continues to this day to be one of the primary drivers of network activity. So this leadership led to the promotion of what is called DOTS, and this is their primary strategy. And DOTS stands for Directly Observed Treatment Short Course. And so what the strategy did was demonstrate that you could shorten treatment using primary drugs to about 6 months, and that you could also establish programs to observe people taking their medication to try to preserve any or prevent any sort of antibiotic resistance forming. And it was controversial in the beginning because academics and researchers felt like it was creating an oversimplified solution to a very complicated problem. And there were also individuals and NGOs and more activist-leaning organizations that were concerned because it didn't fully address MDR-TB or HIV-TB patients who often have non-pulmonary tuberculosis. So even though there was initially some contestation around this intervention strategy, its simplicity and evidence of cost-effectiveness that the World Bank had demonstrated really drew in ministers of health and donors. And so with these powerful actors sort of coalescing around the strategy, at least temporarily, the debate around it went away. And so they were able to sort of take the strategy and promote it heavily. At that point, the World Health Organization hired an advocacy expert to help brand and market the strategy, and it became sort of the foundation of all of the networked activity. And so the WHO worked for a while to bring attention to this and then realized that they couldn't do it alone. At this point, they started to open up their activities and try to bring in additional actors. So in 2000, they held a meeting in Amsterdam where they brought together ministers of health from the 22 high-burden countries, funders, donors, and some NGOs, and they created this political document, the Amsterdam Declaration, which was calling for political action. And this really built momentum around tuberculosis, which led to a meeting held in 2001 in Washington, D.C. that brought together over 200 organizations. And this is what launched the official partnership structure and the global plan. And the global plan was really interesting because it took the DOT strategy but also built in additional information on MDR-TB and HIV in addition to other areas that people had felt were neglected in the DOT strategy. And it combined both technical information and advocacy to draw on various groups. And then when you look at the governance structure that was created, what's interesting to point out here is I'd just like to draw your attention to the working groups because this is a way that they also institutionalized both DOTS as the primary strategy but these other issues that people were concerned about. And they created forums for debate and discussion and decision-making that has helped to sustain activities over time and lead to the adaptation of the various strategies. And to give you a bird's eye view of what the network looks like, you can see that the center, the secretariat that was established in 2001, has a very close working relationship still with the WHO TB department. And in fact, the two of them are responsible for the day-to-day activities of the partnership and the network itself. The secretariat answers directly to the TB department administratively, so they're really at the center. And then surrounding them is a core group of organizations that are highly involved in the working groups, and these include representatives of the ministries of health of the high-burden countries, NGOs such as Partners in Health, donors such as USAID and the Global Fund, and also research organizations, so both academic institutions and private groups such as the Foundation for Innovative Diagnostics. And then when you look, the bulk of the organizations, the bulk of the 1,600 that I mentioned, are really peripheral. So they're not involved in day-to-day decision-making. They have signed on to the global plan, but it's uncertain at this point the extent to which they actually participate and implement network activities. So at this point, too, the partnership is trying to assess their role in partnership work. And then just to quickly summarize some of the strategies that I've mentioned that I think have been really successful for this network is this branding of dots. You know, coming up with a concrete solution and marketing it really gave the gave the network legs, and it gave momentum to the movement around raising attention to tuberculosis. And even though it was controversial, and the debate has never really gone away, they were able to gain more coherence through sort of expanding it eventually into a global plan and into creating those participatory bodies for debate and discussion. And none of that would have been possible without sustained focus on developing and improving tuberculosis data over time to show both what successes were happening in the field but also what still needed to be done. And so they were able to sustain attention over the last decade through this research and through continuous advocacy at the global level. And then also through process adaptation, because not only is sustaining issue attention important by doing advocacy, but you also have to sustain participation among network members. And you can see that in terms of outcomes, funding for tuberculosis has increased, and data for this was collected in 2002, so it shows sort of from the point that the partnership was started until more recently. So it's on the increase, and part of the successful story here, too, is that a lot of the funding going to TB is from domestic sources. And this is the data from the 22 high-burden countries. So it also sort of demonstrates the buy-in of these countries in the core group of the network. But I should also point out that this funding falls about $2 billion short of what is needed according to the global plan. And to the date, about 180 countries are implementing the DOT Stop TB strategy, and the WHO estimates that a total of 51 million people have been successfully treated and approximately 20 million people have been saved. And this is the benchmark that this is being measured against was the previous standard of care. And as I mentioned, TB is declining in terms of incidence and mortality rates, but some people are frustrated still at the slow progress. So this points to some concerns in the network about broader impact. So some of those who have not been a fan of DOTS from the very beginning are concerned that this increased reporting in MDR TB is an indication that DOTS isn't working. And they raise the fact that the evidence being given about DOTS impact, that it's difficult to really tease that out of broader trends in economic development, for example, that might be explaining TB incidence decline. And they also point to this differing benchmarks for measuring effectiveness. A lot of the activists, instead of looking at the previous standard of care and improvements made, are still really frustrated that there's a million deaths every year and are really frustrated that there's not a coherent plan for dealing with MDR TB. And so that is how they're sort of establishing their benchmark for effectiveness. And these concerns have led to a debate within the network now about potentially putting more distance between the TB department and the partnership secretariat, so potentially changing the structure of the organization of the network decision-making bodies. And drawing out lessons from these, and at this point, these implications are more propositions for future research and some things that we're going to be looking at more when we get into the comparison part of our larger GAP project. But I'm proposing that potentially the stability and leadership in the early stages of a network's development can be really helpful for getting the network off of the ground and directing the diffusion of an intervention strategy. But it's also important to look at the characteristics of these central organizations, because not all organizations might have the capacity to play this role in a network. And the development of a coherent strategy gives an issue tractability. It gives people a sense that something can be done. So the branding around DOTS is really effective in creating this sense of tractability. But because it was not fully accepted among all network members, it also requires adaptation over time, not only to other people's opinions and ideas of best approaches, but because the disease is continuing to evolve. And so having these institutionalized bodies for decision-making and consensus building has been helpful in this process, as well as having something like a global plan, which can change and adapt over time. And I'd also like to point out here that this agreement can be both a challenge and an opportunity for networks, because it's led to increasing pressure to improve data collection, to keep momentum moving forward, to not give up because there's still a million deaths every year, but it can also be destabilizing if it's not managed well, as we can see now with this potential separation between the Secretariat and the Department, or these activist NGOs that have been very vocal now in Lancet editorials about potentially separating themselves from the network entirely and going out on their own. So that's what I have for this presentation. Thank you very much.